The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
On today's show, we're going to take a look at the state of healthcare costs in America and see what maybe people can do about those costs, ideally lowering them. So we have a special guest on today's show. We'll get to that in just a moment. But welcome to today's show here on the Retirement and IRA Show. Jim Salnier is here with me, as usual.
As always.
As always. It's not always. You've missed a show here and there. It's not very often.
Not very often.
Few times less than I've missed shows, probably.
You've missed far more shows than I've missed. Pete, we're going to throw him under the bus. He's missed every show.
Well, he's kind of retired, so.
It's no excuse. No excuse. Pete should have still been here.
So today's show, just so you know, is a live recorded show. We are not in the studio. We cannot take your phone calls today. However, I suspect that we will have questions come up based on today's topics, and feel free to contact us. Best way to do that is at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. On there, you'll find a variety of ways to contact us. Send us a message, email, phone call. And we're more than happy to follow up with any questions you might have from today's show. Maybe in the future, I don't know about next week. Today, the show is being broadcast for the first time on August 13th, 2016. I'm not sure what our plans are for a live show, but...
That's touch and go. More touch than go.
Okay, so we won't address that at this point.
Well, doesn't look good, because on the 20th, I may go to a event down in Denver, a party event type thing. You know, I belong to Meetup.
Wait. You're going to skip out on the show to party? Is that what you just said?
I'm not a big party guy, but it's a cookout type thing. But that's at 10 o'clock in Morrison. So
a cookout in the morning?
At 10 to 3 at some park in Morrison. Mm-hmm. And I thought I may go there. Because there's like 90 people signed up and a good... Hey, I'm looking for a woman. Well, you know that.
Maybe
there could be someone down
maybe
there.
Maybe you don't have to be there
right
at 10.
The love of my life could be there.
And they'll think you're a little odd if you're there waiting for them when they show up. So you should make an entrance at about 11:30, which is when you'd get there after doing our
show.
Well,
if I do decide to do that, so that'll be on the 20th. And then the 27th, I have nothing, I don't think, for the 27th. Do you?
I don't recall. That's a long ways in the future.
And Pete may be back but from his practice retirement. Maybe he can come live. I don't know. I don't want to speak for him. But we will try to do a live show the 20th or the 27th so we can give away the Fat Albert's pie. We haven't given away a pie for a while.
I'm glad this isn't a live show because it would be inappropriate to speak of healthcare issues while giving away pies.
I was just thinking of that because the guest we're going to introduced to everyone is in incredible shape and probably is cringing the fact that we mentioned eating pies. Not that who out of the two of us eats the more pie? That I mean, I think that answer
you talk
is easy.
About it all the time. I rarely get a pie.
Well, we'll introduce our special guest in a minute. I want to set the stage or at least explain how I ended up asking him to come on today's show. But we will try to do a live show either the 20th or 27th for those of you who listen to us actually in Northern Colorado. For those iTunians, those listening to us throughout the nation, really doesn't matter to you if we're live or not because you always just listen to us off of iTunes.
And send us an email.
And send us email, which is what I want to get to. We've had several emails, and we're not going to get to them on today's show.
What?
Well, we have a special guest.
Okay, I understand.
Okay.
But I'm anxious to put more stars on the map.
Well, these are people you're already talking to.
Okay.
And they're emailing you back with other Social Security issues that we're trying to solve for them. And we got one non-Social Security email,
right,
which we will get to. And I think they're from a state with a star already.
So we've already been starred?
I think so.
Okay.
But I want to give a shout out to those iTunians who have recently reached out to us. We are not going to answer your question on today's show. We're going to dedicate today's show to the state of healthcare in America today and how it works, some of the costs associated with it, and some of the innovative strategies people are trying to do absent any government direction on how to lower healthcare costs and keep our health going. So that's what today's show is going to be, and it's going to be a lot more interesting than what I just made it out to be because it doesn't sound too exciting the way I made it up to be.
I think it sounds great.
Oh, okay, hopefully. But the reason I wanted to bring this gentleman on is I recently met him. Remember I said I was in Boulder not too long ago?
You're there all the time, so that's not shocking.
But I was there not too long ago at Boulder Chamber. Mm-hmm. Remember, because we said they don't call themselves Chamber of Commerce because Boulder doesn't like the word commerce. Mm-hmm. So it's just the Boulder Chamber. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I met a doctor there. We talked about that on a previous show, and I was going to try to get him in, and I got him here. He's sitting here patiently waiting to be introduced. Mm-hmm. And what had happened is during this talk that I had with him, he really has a phenomenal approach to healthcare, a really unique approach that I think our listeners would benefit from. And I wanted to bring him on so he could begin by painting a picture of the state of healthcare in America today from the eyes of a doctor, a practicing doctor. What does he have to deal with the state of healthcare in America today? Where does he see healthcare going? Does anybody ever wonder what all these acronyms and all these different types of health programs, what they are? What's an HMO? What's a PPO? How do you self-fund? What's a qualified health plan, a non-qualified health plan, a high-deductible health plan, an HSA, a health savings account, which we still have that one listener waiting for us to do a whole show on HSAs. We haven't got to that yet. How does a plan like Aflac, I mean, we talked about Aflac on this show mostly because of the fun talking duck.
We mostly talk about the duck. I don't think we've actually talked about the plan.
No, well, we've talked about the duck. Well, the duck actually is backing a type of insurance known as an indemnity plan. It's not just a talking duck, which is a very talented talking duck, by the way. But Aflac is actually called an indemnity plan. How does that work? And then how do these newer health share plans or direct primary care is probably the better word for it. How does direct primary care work? Well, the doctor that we have here today knows answers to all this and more. And that's why we wanted to bring him on.
Perfect.
And he's going to talk a lot about that. He's going to introduce himself, give us a little background. And today, the big thing I want our listeners to know, this is really being geared towards healthcare for those under the age of 65. We're not really going to be getting into, at least I don't believe we are, specifically into Medicare or Medicaid or Medigap policies, prescription Part D, Part A, Part B, how all this works, Medicare Advantage plans. We're not going to spend, I don't believe, a lot of time on that. We're going to really talk a lot about for healthcare of those under 65. But of course, if we want to talk about those other aspects of healthcare for those retired over the age of 65, we may get into that as well. Okay, so, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to take a turn to speak.
You got plenty of time. You just interrupted
me.
Excellent.
So we're going to introduce now Dr. David Tusick, who's here live with us. Welcome today. Say hello to everyone. And maybe share with us your background, where you went to school, if you did.
Or, well, of course you're self-taught. He did. He's a doctor.
Well, maybe you can maybe you can get one of those web broadcasts and take a... No?
No.
Okay.
No.
Maybe share with us where you went to school, where you're practicing, etc.
There's a beautiful island off the coast of... No.
Grenada?
School? I had to go to school for this?
First of all, it's a pleasure to be on your show, and thanks for inviting me, both of you guys. My name is Dave Tusick. I'm a board-certified family physician, And my medical education journey started in Omaha, Nebraska. I went to University of Nebraska Medical Center prior to that.
Are you a Nebraskan?
Not originally, but I married a
Nebraskan,
true-blooded, beautiful Nebraska woman. And so
you have lots of red things in your house.
We actually do have. Yeah. even on the front of our house, we have some flags and things. Mm. During certain days in the fall.
Well, we'll ignore that aspect of the situation at this point.
Well, I went to college in Colorado. Actually, my whole sort of journey in healthcare started in college because I didn't major in physics or chemistry or biology like most med students. I majored in anthropology and literature. And, you know, eventually when I got into medical school, I began this long process of trying to figure out, you know, how people actually get healthy, both in their bodies as well as sort of spiritually and mentally. And I tried to apply as many of those ideas, as many of those concepts as I could to this whole wonderful paradigm that we find ourselves in, which is the U.S. healthcare system. And you know, sometimes it's a bit of a challenge to find a way to optimize your overall health and quality of life by just entering the mainstream healthcare system as a patient. And so, you know, so much of what I've been involved in over the years is really trying to push the boundaries a little bit because the status quo makes it not so easy for people to actually get healthy. You know, I'll just give you a quick example. I oftentimes will spend time with residents, so physicians in training who are out of medical school but haven't started their own practice yet. And usually that's a 3 to 4 year process of residency. And, you know, they'll rotate with me, they'll round with me, they'll hang out with me in the clinics. And I had a very, very smart young gal recently with me, and I asked her, so if you had the average American and you could only do one thing, you could send them either to a board certified family physician like she and I were, or a life coach, who do you think would make that person more healthy? And without missing a beat, she said, life coach, definitely. And so here we are, we have this super well-trained, hotshot new doctor who has basically talked her own self out of a job, saying that life coaches would be more likely to help you be healthy than the, you know, 4 years of medical school followed by 3 or 4 years of residency and the hundreds of thousands of dollars of loans that most of us end up accumulating over the time. And so where does all of this go when what it translates to so much of the time is 5 to 7 minute long visits where, you know, we wait for people to call us, wait for our phone to ring so that we can schedule an appointment so that we could spend this 5 to 7 minutes with them and come up with a quick diagnosis that corresponds to an ICD-10 code. We're up to ICD-10 now. And that, of course, corresponds to a drug therapy. And so you whip out your prescription pad and you sort of send the medication off to the pharmacy. And somehow we think that this is the right way to make people actually thrive in this country, to make them healthy. And, you know, we all know that we don't die of, in this country or any other country for that matter, genetic deficiencies of drugs, right? We die because of poor lifestyle. And so it takes a certain amount of time to get to know somebody, to unwrap all of the different influencers upon their health, to begin to get to know them as a person so that we can actually move the needle in some actionable way to make them healthier. And so how the hell do you do that in 5 or 7 minutes, you know, a couple of times a year? It's very, very difficult. So right away from the foundation of how we've set up our system, and, you know, we're obviously going to get to all of the different elements, because the first thing you have to do if you're going to change how you practice medicine is you have to change how you pay for medicine. and pay for our health care. So I feel like I'm rambling a little bit, but
it's good.
You guys can rein
me
in.
It sets the stage because you led into pay, and that's what everybody thinks of for our post-65 clients. We have to sometimes break the news to them, doctor, on how expensive it's going to be. Everybody thinks, oh, gee, once I hit 65, I'm on Medicare, government's going to take care of me. Mm-hmm. And they don't understand at best, it's an 80-20 plan. But in reality, it's more like a 60-40 plan. And there are so many copays and deductibles and items that aren't covered, not to even mention that vision, dental, and hearing aren't covered at all, that we have to break the news to them. It's going to cost a lot of money. And you have to pay for Part B. Granted, the government pays for 75% of it, and most people pay for the other 25% of the cost of Part B. It still can be expensive for a retiree on a fixed budget. And then you have to augment that with a prescription Part D plan, a Medigap policy, or a Medicare Advantage. And you start adding it all up, and you start to realize you're going to end up paying almost as much as you were paying prior to turning 65, unless you are someone like me who pays for healthcare themselves out of their own pocket. I'm a small employer, so I don't offer healthcare benefit here. I can't afford it. Fortunately, everybody who works for me is either married to somebody who has healthcare, or like Chris, they work for another company. Chris works for CSU. He's a finance instructor, and he gets healthcare through them. But I, as an individual, I have to buy my own, and it is outrageously expensive. And the deductible that I carry is outrageously high already at $6,000. Plus, I pay for a concierge service, which we're going to get into today because it ties into a little bit of what you do. So if you start looking at everything I pay, it's outrageous. And it's not going to go down that much when I turn 65. So what I hope to be able to accomplish here is first, and you became a doctor in 99, you said?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So you've been a doctor for about 17 years, and you've been in the ACA, Affordable Care Act, the biggest oxymoron, I think, of any government acronym they've came up with. Not an acronym, initialism.
It's hard to. True.
ACA is an initialism.
Thanks for noticing.
Yes.
Very nice.
We I don't know if you know the difference between an initialism and an acronym, doctor, but Chris did, and he pointed it out to us on a previous show.
It's a very educational show. We cover a variety of topics on here. So.
And grammar is one of them. Yeah. This is a great show if you want to learn how to pronounce proper grammar. So what I find ironic about the Affordable Care Act is my premiums prior to Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act were $363 a month through the Colorado Exchange, you mm-hmm. know, the Colorado sure. nonprofit exchange that went out of business.
Mm-hmm.
3 years later, the nonprofit is gone, and my premiums now are $585 a month for my coverage. And I've also been told to expect around a 24% increase next year. And under Obamacare, I haven't even entered the next age bracket yet. Obamacare is priced in 5-year age brackets. I'm at 53, so I still have 2 more years before my age alone is going to push my premium higher. And my premiums are going through the roof. And I don't know what it's like at CSU. Have they passed any of these costs on to you? Or Chris, are you still...
They self-insure and essentially administer through Blue Cross and Blue Shield is their... set up, and they've actually done a pretty good job of keeping down increases that we've had them, but not nearly as egregious as you hear about in the individual plans through the exchanges that people have been experiencing the past few years. And even the years before that, I remember an employer I was at many years ago, this has to be 15, maybe 20 years ago, we grappled with suddenly this announcement that our small group plan, the premiums were going to go up some 40% or something. And at that time, it was just absolutely shocking because nothing like that had happened before. So that supposedly was one of the things that ACA was supposed to fix.
And it didn't.
And it's still occurring. And I would argue we're hearing about it occurring even more maybe than before.
ACA, Affordable Care Act, has done nothing to make healthcare more affordable. It's done everything to make it more expensive. It has expanded coverage, yes, I will admit that, but at the cost of people like myself having to pay far, far more than my true cost of insurance would be, I have to pay significantly more, so someone who didn't have insurance may pay significantly less. I get it. I would have respected the government more if they just came out and said, we're going to raise your taxes, rather than try to pawn it off as I'm getting something supposedly great. My very first health care I bought, when I first moved out here in 99, I didn't have any health care. I cobra'd from the police department for however long I was allowed to. It was either 12 or 18 months. I forget how long. And then the cobra ran out, would have ran out somewhere around early or late, 2001, very early 2002. And I went 3 years without insurance. I just figured, heck with it. I'm healthy. I just won't get hurt. but I did have Aflac. An indemnity plan, which I knew was not health insurance, but it would have given me a little something if I did something stupid. But I went without insurance. But my very first insurance that I did purchase would have been in 2004, 2005, somewhere around there. My monthly premium was $83 a month. Mm-hmm. Today it's 580, whatever I said, I forget, 580 something. If you do, I don't have my HP12C here, but how much that has gone up in 12 years, to go from $83 to, let's say, $583, that's how much my health insurance has gone up. What is that on an annualized basis?
Oh, I'll give it to you in one moment. Over 12 years?
Do, 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 do.
18%.
18% a year on average. Whereas the government is saying CPI during that time period was probably less than 2%. Mm-hmm. Healthcare inflation is just going through the roof, and it has really gone through the roof after the passage of ACA, and I'll have the doctor expand upon this, and it's mostly because of a lot of the mandates that they put in there, and there's no incentive anymore to remain healthy. My premiums would be the same as a 53-year-old if I was a 53-year-old overweight, diabetic, Twinkie-eating, non-exercising slouch. I would pay the same in healthcare as someone such as myself, which is a semi-Twinkie eating, semi-exercising.
You've sworn off the chocodiles, right? No chocolate-covered Twinkies, just Twinkies, right?
No, I'm not quite that bad. But I do try. Hey, I eat kale. I just planted some in my garden. I do try to maintain my health and remain healthy, but there is no incentivization for me to do anything anymore because my cost is the same.
Nor is there incentive to shop around or consider different therapies or solutions to your problem, because there's no financial benefit to you to do so.
No.
So, as the individual health seeker, healthcare seeker.
So doctor, let me ask you, you had to have seen all this over that same time period. How has it impacted your practice and your business?
Well, you know, I think you're absolutely right to point out that the ACA did nothing to decrease the cost of care, and that's the fundamental problem. Is we have a machine, we have a train that's sort of running off the tracks in terms of unsustainability, in terms of excess costs that are coming from the top, from the bottom, from every possible sector, all of the different players in the healthcare system, insurance companies, the hospital administrators, the pharmaceutical industry, even the different medical device companies and so on are taking, you know, they're taking more than their share in so many different ways with a total lack of transparency, and that problem has never gotten addressed.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, if I can interrupt. For the transparency issue, I think, is the number one glaring problem with healthcare costs. Whenever you have a system where the costs are not transparent to the consumer, then you don't have any true competition. You have no way of revealing mispricing or egregious situations. It all starts with that.
There's no other industry like it, really. Mm-hmm. And whether you need an imaging scan or something like that, the span in terms of difference in prices can be 10x.
Now, do you know, as a doctor, if you're going to send one of your patients need an MRI or a CAT scan or something, do you know ahead of time what it's going to cost, or you're just as clueless when you send them?
I didn't for a long time until my life completely changed in 2008.
Right. So when we come back, we're going to lead in with what changed in Dr. Tusek's life in 2008 that has allowed him to either know all this or begin embarking on a business model to tell his patients what healthcare is really going to cost them. We'll get back into that at the top of the next segment.
Perfect. When we come back from this short break, we are going to hear a popular song from 1935, which of course was the year that Social Security started. This 1935 song was written for the movie Broadway Melody, which was actually a movie from 1936. But the song technically is from 1935, so it can connect us to that start of Social Security. So we'll be back with you right after this short break.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
You are my lucky star.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is one of the top songs from 1935. Pretty obvious on that one. That is You Are My Lucky Star, which was recorded for the movie Broadway Melody. That, of course, is the infamous Louis Armstrong. Hard to miss that one. But many people have recorded this. Eddie Duchesne back then also had a version of it. And I ran across one as I was trying to pull this one up. I ran across maybe 30 other versions of that song recorded by all kinds of people. So that's our tribute to the start of Social Security back. We're in the month of its birthday. This is the 81st birthday month.
Yeah, what day was it signed in August?
Now you're putting the pressure on me. I believe it was the 13th. So actually,
you keep talking. I will Google this one.
It's either the 13th or 16th, I believe. So we're really, really close.
We may have to sing happy birthday.
Well, let's not get carried away. So as if you joined us in the first segment, we are talking about the state of healthcare costs in the United States. And we've got a great special guest with us today, Dr. David Tusick, who's been sharing with us some of his background and thoughts on the state of the healthcare system in the United States. And
I have the answer, if I can interrupt.
Absolutely.
August 14th, 1935.
I was within a day.
You were the day. So when is the 14th? Is that today?
No, it's for people listening live, that would be tomorrow, Sunday, the 14th.
Yes. So. Happy birthday. No. We're going to have to lead in with a happy birthday. No, we can't, because I have to pay a royalty if you play happy birthday.
What?
Yeah, somebody owns the song Happy Birthday, and you can't sing
Somebody
happy
owns
birthday.
All these songs. We
Yeah, but you don't have to pay royalties for those. But the Happy Birthday one, you have to. Remember the radio station? Yeah, they wouldn't let us sing Happy Birthday. We had to do something else.
I think it's you can't do the whole song. We never play all the songs. That's what the license
is. Nah, I think if you just utter the words Happy Birthday in that songish kind of voice.
You just did, though.
Yeah, now we got to pay.
Well, I don't. You do.
Telling you, someone owns that song.
Get out your credit card. So, anyway, we're going to get back to this issue of the state of healthcare costs in the United States. And, Jim, what direction would you like to go here?
We're going to go back to Dr. Tusick, who was going to tell us something seminal happened in his life.
Ah, that's right. I forgot about that.
In 2008, mm-hmm. That single-handedly is the reason he's here today. Because if that didn't happen to him in 08, I probably wouldn't have met him in Boulder, and he wouldn't be here.
Wow.
That's a big thing. So what happened in 08?
You know, we were talking about healthcare transparency, and I think many of your listeners are familiar with the New York, it was actually the Time Magazine cover article from a few years back called The Bitter Pill, where it talked about the $50 Tylenol tablets in the hospitals mm-hmm. and all that craziness. Well, I had a similar experience just personally, and one of my patients came into my exam room. She was literally being held up by her husband, and he said, listen, my wife has had sinus headaches and migraine headaches and tension headaches and cluster headaches. She's had every headache under the sun, but I've never seen her in this much pain. There's something really wrong. And when I examined her, I was worried that she might have a bleed on her brain, so we needed to get an immediate CAT scan. So off she went, and just as they were leaving, he grabbed me by the arm and he said, listen, we have terrible insurance. Of course, we'll do whatever we need to do, doc, but how much is this going to cost us? And I said, CAT scan of the brain? I don't know. How bad can it be? A couple hundred dollars? And I honestly didn't know. And this is a problem that is very pervasive. We physicians simply have no idea what we're doing when we're writing out a prescription pad for an order for a drug, for a test, for an imaging study, for a scan, what have you. In fact, one of my mentors in medical school asked us when we were rounding, you know, what's the most expensive piece of technology in the whole hospital? And we all were trying to wrangle our brains and decide whether it was the new PET scanner that they bought. And he, you know, lifted up his Bic pen and he said, this is the most expensive equipment, because it's with our little pens that we order all these tests. So anyway, she went on and she did great. And about 3 weeks later, she came back with tears in her eyes, holding a bill for almost $9,000. And literally, I felt that I had broken, you know, my own contract with my patients, the Hippocratic Oath, to do no harm. And, you know, when you send people off to get scans, not knowing anything about what the potential repercussions are financially, which we do still to this day, day in and day out in this country, it's pretty heartbreaking. So anyway, from that moment forward, I decided, you know what, I can't live like this anymore, and I'm never going to order anything. I'm not going to send anyone to the pharmacy, to the lab, anywhere without knowing exactly how much they're going to cost and how much they're going to pay. And so what I found was that there really was this Wizard of Oz screen. And, you know, now I'm able to get for my patients the exact same CT scan of the head for $300. We can do MRIs for $5,000 in many of the hospitals in our local area here. But I can just as well do it for $400 or $450. We can spend $700 on an X-ray, but we can do it just as well for $60. Same exact X-ray, same radiologist reading it.
How do you do that?
Well, what you do is you run around and you use the market force of capitalism. And you say, listen, this lab over here is giving me the cholesterol test for $5. You're charging me $80. I'm not going to send them to you. Forget this. And they say, okay, we'll do it for $5. And I said, well, wait a minute. I just said that they could do it for $5. Can you beat that? And, you know, sometimes they actually come to the table and outbid one another.
So why isn't there more pricing transparency? Because it does allow a patient, or in this case the doctor, to maybe affiliate with a company that's going to do it for less than another company. But it is totally non-transparent. You don't know what you're paying. I remember, I think I told you, Doc, when I first met you last year, I had cut my hand and needed some stitches. And it didn't dawn on me at the time. I am in the MDVIP program, a concierge service, and you're allowed to call your doctor whenever you want. I totally forgot I was in that program, and I had to go get my hand stitched. And it didn't dawn on me to call them, or as Justin, one of my employees, pointed out, his wife is a physician's assistant, and they have three young kids, so she has a stitch kit at home. He said, you should have just called me. She could have stitched you. Okay, I wasn't thinking about all that. I just trying to find a place. I couldn't find a place. It was 5 o'clock in the evening on a Sunday. No urgent care or those clinic things were open. So I went to the emergency room.
Sure.
And I had no, I just figured, okay, I just need a few little stitches. When the bill came in, they wanted $1,800, but there was no breakdown of how they came up with that $1,800. And it just, there was no way of, I couldn't go in there ahead of time because I asked the guy at the desk, I went bleeding to death. I just said, how much is this going to cost?
Well, I know of no
other. He didn't know.
Yeah. I know of no other industry on earth, certainly not in this country, where this can go on. And so I feel that it's our mission as physicians. Unfortunately, we are in this role where we have to not just be champions of our patients' health, but also of their pocketbooks. Because the only one who can peer behind that Wizard of Oz screen is a doctor. When you call and you say, how much is this MRI going to cost? Rarely will they even tell you. And oftentimes they won't.
Are you talking about you as in you as a doctor or me as in me as a patient?
I think if you call as a patient, oftentimes it's very, very difficult to get a straight answer from anybody, whether it's a hospital or a lab or an ER or an X-ray facility or anything else. So, you know, with physicians, we have access, and we can leverage that access, I think, to the benefit of our patients. And there was no way for me to continue practicing, being consciously aware that I was sending people into such a wild west, uncontrolled, and shrouded, you know, frontier of extreme healthcare bills. So now when you come to my practice and you say, well, how much is this going to cost?
You know.
I tell you exactly to the penny. And I can even usually tell you, you know what? You have a choice. You can go here and it's going to be this much. You can go here, it's going to be 5X. Or you can go there and it's 10X for the same damn thing.
Now, that's the cost of something. And that person may or may not have insurance. So the insurance may pick up some of the cost or not. Right. But you're saying that this is what the cost is, whether you're paying out of your own pocket or through insurance. This is what it is. Is that what you're saying you can do?
You know, what we can do is for people who have deductibles that they haven't met.
Okay, like my policy, I don't know what you have, Chris, at work. But mine, because it's an HSA plan, mm-hmm. is a high deductible, $6,000 right. deductible.
Right. So we actually have to take a little bit of a sidebar and have a fairly in-depth conversation about this, because we say, listen, you may have your HDHP plan, maybe with Cigna or Aetna or Blue Cross or whoever it is.
Why don't you put that in English?
Okay. So your high deductible plan that okay. marries with your HSA is administered by one of these companies, right? One of these insurance companies. They all have contracted rates with hospitals and imaging facilities and labs around the country.
So they've done kind of what you've done, have you shopped around negotiated a price. So
right.
they actually know exactly what they're going to pay for this.
Exactly.
They just don't pass that information along to the patient.
It's almost impossible to know.
Correct.
And if, you know, you can probably find out, but it takes hours, weeks, or even months to figure out. Furthermore, it may take hours, weeks, or months to say, all right, fine, I get the contracted rate. I understand what my out-of-pocket's going to be since I haven't met my deductible. Let's just get on with it and get the test. Well, now you have to go through a process called prior authorization, which is the perennial mother may I syndrome, where I'm trying to run my practice, and I'm paying my staff to take care of patients. Meanwhile, one of them has to sit in the back room and spend, you know, 45 minutes, 60 minutes on the phone with these insurance companies trying to ask them whether or not, hey, this is an appropriate test based upon our medical decision making. So that whole insurance-based system in primary care is, in my opinion, completely it's just a misplaced, misallocated aspect to put any kind of insurance. Primary care has always been affordable. It's affordable in this country. It's affordable in Europe. It's affordable all over the world.
And primary care, if I understand it correctly, it's kind of like the first line of defense.
Yeah, but it's the first line, but it's 90% of all health care.
Correct. No, I'm not disputing that.
So it's a huge amount of the health care that we get is
exactly,
through primary care. So
primary
it's
care.
Pediatrics.
Yep.
It's gynecology, it's adult medicine, you know, outpatient medicine, and it's urgent care. So the second thing that happened to me back to my patient with the CAT scan in 2008 is I used to be an ER doctor too. And one day when I was walking back from the ER, I asked myself, how many of these patients could I have responsibly, legitimately treated in my little clinic as opposed to in this massive hospital setting, which is the emergency room?
Oh, I didn't need to go to an emergency room for
right?
5 stitches, but I couldn't find a place open
exactly.
5 o'clock on a
That's
Sunday.
That's exactly right. So I asked, well, man, what is it? Is it 50%? Is it 70%? Turns out it's about 78% in certain markets of ER visits are like yours. They don't need to have the trauma team. They don't need to have, you know, all of the resources that the hospital has with all of their overhead, which is, to some degree appropriate that costs more than what I have at my clinic, my disposal. But 78%, guys, can be handled in a clinic. The only problem is the clinics are closed.
Yeah, that's what I couldn't believe. We could not find, in a quote-unquote, like emergencies don't happen on nights and weekends.
Well, we're starting to see more of those, luckily. There are some more. There's some urgent care facilities now that are kind of like
careful
emergency.
Because they look like they're sort of masquerading as urgent care.
I've heard horror stories on those that there's some that aren't.
Cost just as much.
Just as much. Yeah.
But really, guys, the solution isn't building more urgent cares of this. Right. The solution is reinventing the primary care physician, having the primary care family doctor actually step up to the plate and start taking care of patients, understanding the marketplace. Understanding that if you send them here, it's going to be $100. If you send them down the street, it's going to be $1,000, and guiding them that way. And also to be more available. So what you mentioned, the word direct primary care, which is, you know, one of my passions and one of the things that I've been involved with for many, many years. We actually founded one of the first primary care programs in Colorado, one of the first in the country. And now Cloud Medical is sort of picking up where that one left off. And with Cloud Medical, we believe that everyone should have 24/7 access to their primary care physician for exactly the kinds of reasons that you're talking about. Because if 84% of the ER visits are unnecessary or can be managed in a simple setting, well, we need to pick up that slack. And so we do. So every one of our patients gets our personal cell phone, our personal email, and we're on call 24/7. Now, there may be times where we're out of town or out of the state, and we have, you know, our partners covering for one another, but there's always someone available for our patients so they don't end up spending $1,800 for a couple of stitches. In fact, they spend $1,800 for an entire family for an entire year of unlimited 24/7 access with no copays. They never pay a copay. It's just like a gym membership.
So how would this direct, what did you call it again?
Direct primary care, DPC.
Direct primary care. Let's just say I had
Is that your term or is that an industry term?
No,
just to clarify.
That's the industry term.
Okay,
that,
so that's what the industry's decided to call this kind of
Exactly. In contrast to concierge medicine, which, you know, generally speaking, is considered to be a little bit more elite, a little bit more spendy, a little bit more expensive. Direct primary care, you know, costs anywhere from $49 to $99 a month per person. And so if you have one of these high deductible plans that costs you a little bit less, let's say it's about $100 less than you would pay for a non-high deductible plan, and instead of, you know, spending the extra $100 on the non-high deductible plan where your deductible is a little bit lower, you dovetail your high deductible with a physician that has a practice like ours that's available to you for those 90% of your healthcare needs around the clock. Not for a month or a year or a couple of visits, but for your entire lifetime.
So let's go back.
That's what DPC is.
Let's go back to last November. I'm out there in my garden. I'm harvesting Brussels sprouts. I slice my hand. But this time I'm in your, you're my doctor. I'm in your program.
Right.
And I'm paying the $99 a month. I would have called you. I know you have a clinic in Longmont, not far from where I live.
Right.
Someone would have met me at that clinic, even though it was 5 o'clock on a Sunday, and stitched my hand up.
Christmas Eve. You know, it's got to be that way. We can't say, well, we're only open till 8:30 because, you know, everything that happens always happens after hours. So we have to be
And
available.
From what you're saying, and this is where I don't quite follow it, would I still have had a cost to pay, or is my $100 a month going to stitch up my stitches, or do I still get a bill afterwards? I'm not saying it would be $1,800, but it would be okay. Well, we had to do a weekend call out, so we need this, and we charge $30 a stitch, and there were five, so there's another $150.
We just hand you a bill for $0. It's all included. It's part of the package. You know, I laugh about the gym analogy, and I say, you ever become a member of a gym and then walked up to the treadmill and had a guy standing there saying, well, that'll be a $20 copay to use the treadmill and $15 to use the bench press?
But there are some things at the gym that are higher up and you pay a little extra for them.
Well, let's talk about those. So the only thing that you pay extra for in direct primary care is when we have to send something out. So let's say you have a mole that I feel like we should biopsy. Or, in fact, I look at it and I tell you, listen, I think this is actually skin cancer. But we want to document, we want to understand when we did the skin cancer surgery that we got all of the bad cells out, so on and so forth. I have to send that sample to a pathologist to read that. That pathologist can charge me anywhere from about $500 to $40. And so our plan works with a pathology company in New Jersey, actually, of all places. We send all of our specimens out there, and they charge us $44 to read our pathology specimens. So,
and you pass that on to the...
I pass that on to you, and I say, look, you know, here's a $45 charge. Are you okay with that? And, you know, never in
so
the history
if it can be
program,
handled in clinic,
if it can be handled,
it's included
in
that.
Absolutely.
So I wake up one day, I just don't feel very good, and you say, come on in. There's no copay. There's no office visit. It's
even
just
for in-office tests like strep tests or something like that. That's
strep
just
tests. You need an EKG. You need a knee or a shoulder drained or injected. We even do platelet-rich plasma injections. Those are included. Some people charge $800 for those. You know, if we need to cast your arm because you broke your arm, that's included. There's no extra charge for that. If we need
and is this in
it.
Just your practice or all direct primary care business models do this? And is this pervasive throughout the United States, or is this just something unique you're starting? Because I think a lot of our listeners would be interested in it, especially, I mean, I don't have kids, but Chris has like 47 last count.
Wow. It's impressive.
Let me count them at the break and I'll let you know.
It's either 6 or 47, somewhere around there. But he's got a lot of little kids running around, and big kids.
They're all big now, but yeah.
But they're accident prone.
Certainly.
And you got chickens. You could trip over a chicken and cut yourself on their beak. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So
we might have to charge him extra. But
but what I'm getting at is I'm sure a lot of our listeners, not only in Colorado, but throughout the nation, are saying, wow, this is pretty good. Because, hey, your $100 per person is less than I pay for my damn cell phone.
Yeah, exactly.
And if I could have got my 5 stitches on a Sunday afternoon at 5 o'clock in Longmont, and saved me the $1,800 I had to give the emergency room.
It's a game changer.
I'm listening.
It's a game changer.
I'll be more inclined to want to cut myself.
Well, I mean, we're here for our patients. We, you know, ultimately, it's about relationships.
But is this throughout the nation? Is this direct primary care an up and rising new business? You look like a younger person than the oldest person in this room, who shall remain nameless because he's a really nice guy. And so you do probably look like you're in your 30s or 40s. Is this something that a younger generation of doctors is doing and not necessarily the older generation? Or is this just something you and your partners came up with?
A little bit of both. So in 2009, I had a dream and, you know, decided to hammer out this plan. Didn't know of anyone else around the country that was doing it. Come to find that we have a couple of real sort of godfathers of the direct primary care movement. Garrison Bliss is the one that I would certainly name to be the originator of this plan. He was doing this back in the 90s in Washington State. And there were several others, but we were one of the first in Colorado. But now, I mean, I don't think you could pick a state. I'm looking at your map here on the wall that doesn't have multiple DPC clinics around the state, and they're growing.
And in order for these to work, because it's not like a gym where you can just have one low-paid person working the desk and everybody is checking in with their swipe cards now and the gyms kind of run themselves. So, again, I'm in the MDVIP plan, and my doctor has promised not to take on more than 600 patients.
Right.
So do you, and I know there's another doctor in your office and a physician's assistant.
Correct.
Okay. Do you all limit yourselves to a certain amount of patients, and then you may have to bring in another doctor? Because this could become overwhelming on a bad weekend where a lot of your patients are getting licked up and getting into little accidents.
Sure,
you can get really busy at that clinic.
Yeah, we absolutely do cap it. You know, the interesting thing is that I purchased a physician's practice several years ago, and as part of that transaction, I obtained all of his charts. One guy, solo physician. 5,000 charts.
Oh, yeah. That's why I went to the MDVIP when I found out the average physician has 3,000 or more, quote-unquote, patients.
Yeah.
And I thought, there's no way that doctor's going to really know truly about me.
Not at all. So for our three providers, we cap it at 500 families, and we're filling up fast.
Wow. So when we come back, we're going to find out a little bit more about direct
primary
care. But I also want, because I promised, I'm going to have the doctor explain a little bit about the different types of health plans that are out there. What's an HMO, a PPO, a self-funded, a qualified, a non-qualified? Give us the inside scoop on some of these plans, just so our listeners can get an idea of how those types of plans work. But then we want to learn more about this direct primary care and how our listeners may be able to find some near them, evaluate them. How do we evaluate the doctors and the offerings? See if there's anything that you can shed some light on that with.
I'd be happy to.
Great. So when we come back from this next break, we're going to hear the number one song from 1976 as we look back 40 years. This number one song was written by a well-known songwriting team, but for this creation, they are credited by the pseudonyms Ann Orson and Carte Blanche. So we'll find out what song that is and who those people really are right after
this
short
break. Have we
heard
this song before?
No. Well, yes, we have, just not on this show.
Oh, so it's a new one. All right.
It is new. So we'll be right back after this break.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show as we hear the number one song from this week in 1976. Jim's favorite year, apparently.
75 was the CD in the car.
You don't like 76?
No, but why would it be my favorite? I thought you were poking fun at what you poked at me last week for.
No, I think you love... No, I just remember you liking lots and lots of songs from 1976.
I think 73 to 76... Oh, 72 to 76, that's some of the best 70s music. When you start getting into 77 and beyond, you got into the disco phase, and I just don't like it.
This is not disco. This is Elton John and Kiki Dee.
Yes, I remember that.
The song was written by Elton and his longtime collaborator, Bernie Taupin. The pseudonyms Ann Orson and Carte Blanche that I mentioned before the break were a pun on the British expression, an horse and a carte blanche.
A what?
A horse and a cart. In an English accent.
That was the word. My Australian accent is a hell of a lot better than that English accent you just gave.
I didn't know it was coming, so I didn't have a time to... I didn't read far enough to know where this was going.
Doctor, I ask you, as an impartial observer, was that a good English accent?
No.
That was... we need to work on that one.
Yeah. I didn't claim when I got on the show that I was going to be doing impressions. So.
All right, because that was terrible.
But Bernie was Ann and Elton was Carte Blanche. So Bernie Taupin, apparently it was Ann Orson.
Interesting. Yeah. And why do we do all this? Do you want me to say it? Do you want to say it?
Something to do with Social Security.
I'll expand a little bit more for that for those listeners who are new and are wondering, why are these guys leaning in
with
songs?
Oh, that's right. Sometimes there are new listeners.
That's right. That's why I'm trying to do this.
Go
ahead. It's radio etiquette to assume you get a new listener at least every week. So for this one new listener who has no idea what the hell we're doing with all these different songs, the reason we do this is we run a blog post called HelpWithMySocialSecurity.com. We've been doing that for a little over a year and a half now. The past 6 months has pretty much been run predominantly solely by Chris. He blogs every week on a different topic with Social Security. So as a lead-in, as because Chris is going to give us an update on what's new on Help With My Social Security in the fourth segment, as a lead-in to that, we begin with a song from 1935. That is the year Social Security was first signed into law. And as we talked about, the actual birthday itself is August 14th, 1935. So Social Security's birthday is tomorrow for those listening on Saturday the 13th. And for those on iTunes, you probably missed the birthday, but you can send them a card whenever you have a chance. So we lead in with a song from 1935. Then we do a song from 40 years ago in the third segment, which is what Chris just led in with, because when Social Security was first created, the actual calculation to determine your benefit was based on what they called 40 elapsed years. And that was always written into the rule, and it was a very convoluted calculation because people never paid into Social Security when it first started. So they didn't really have a baseline to go by. So they had a calculation based on 40 elapsed years, and that's why we look back 40 years. Next segment, Chris is going to give us the number one song in America 35 years ago, because today, since the early 50s, they switched. It was always part of the original law. They switched to evaluating your benefit based on a calculation they call 35 computation years. And that's why most people today know they look at your highest 35 years of earnings, they average them for inflation, and they determine your Social Security benefit based on that. So that's why we look back with songs from 1935, songs from 40 years ago, and songs from 35 years ago. It's all in a way of being fun, hopefully a little bit different, a little entertaining, as we lead into what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
That was a super long description.
Do you expect anything else from me?
No.
Because if you're not going to do it, you best park and take 5 minutes for me to explain it.
Next time I'll handle it. No problem.
No, you just say, we do it because we like songs. And that's it.
Well, that's kind of how it started.
But nobody knows. There's a whole reason for it. You may be able to talk a little more concise, precise, and quicker.
Oh, I'll do that next time.
Yes, but I think my way is better.
More is not always better. So, getting back to our, I think, fascinating topic as we're discussing the state of healthcare with our guest, Dr. David Tusick. We left off last segment with Jim wondering what are some of the acronyms, you know, HMO, PPO, those sorts of things, high deductible health plans. Exactly how do these all compare with one another? What do these things mean? So, Dr. Tusick,
wow, maybe you can... before we introduce the doctor, he just handed me his phone. I'm assuming every dot is a direct primary care office.
That is correct. So if you go to dpcfrontier.com, and spelled in the conventional way, dpcfrontier.com.
Yes, that would be D as in Doctor, P as in Paul, C as in Charlie, dpcfrontier, FRONTIER.com. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
A map?
A map.
Like and our map.
Yes, but with a hell of a lot more dots. Yeah. Why are some green, some red, and some yellow?
I'd have to look at the fine print. I haven't looked at it. They updated the website recently. That may have to do with the pricing of the different models.
And Colorado's Front Range is peppered with them.
Indeed it is.
Look at that. I mean, they're everywhere. And then when you expand on the map, I mean...
We've come a long way since...
My goodness, you know. Colorado has a ton of these direct primary care physician offices.
Before you move on with what we kind of teased people with at the last segment, are there practices, do you have to do a full conversion to this, or can a practice kind of simultaneously have some people in the traditional model and some people in a DPC model? Is that possible?
That's a great question. Yeah, those are called hybrid practices. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people who are coming out fresh out of medical school or residency, and they sort of hang a shingle and they want to become a family physician. They, many people would say are in the ideal situation, the ideal setting to just launch a pure direct primary care program.
Right.
If you have, you know, kids who are on their way to college and you have this infrastructure that's set up to be a fee-for-service type of practice, it's very, very difficult to sort of turn off the lights one day and tell all of your patients that you're no longer accepting their insurance and turn on the lights the next morning as a DPC model. So many of us will transition in this hybrid manner where for a period of time we'll continue to take insurance.
Now, I want to point out, because we're going to get into a few of the different types of health insurance policies and plans right now, but you don't take insurance, but your clients still have insurance. I've been to your website. You have two different levels of I guess, I don't want to say care, but program options. Mm-hmm. One, as and you clearly allude to, is if you already have traditional insurance, mm-hmm. you can sign up for our, I guess, level A offering. And it is, I guess, designed really to be used with insurance. And you explain, why would you want to pay extra even though you have insurance? And you get into, because we can help you shop the best for your deductible. And you listed everything that is included. And that's what I wanted to talk to you about, because when I first was reading it the other night, I thought, there's no way. Because as I was reading it, I thought, I think my stitches would have cost me nothing under his model. And I says, it can't be. But from what you're saying, it would have. Because I am willing to pay $100 a month, and I might go 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 weeks without needing something. That was a joke instead of months.
Yeah, pretty good.
Because I can be a klutz at times. So you'll lose money on me if I sign up with you. You best say no. But it would be included because I am willing to pay every month and maybe not need you every month. If I have a good year, I may just go in for one physical and that's it. And you can use that profit, I guess, to help offset costs with someone else. I get that's probably how it works. But I was amazed at everything that is included. So I want to encourage our listeners, whether you're in Colorado and if you're in the Boulder Longmont area, Dr. Tusek's offices are there and he is taking new patients. But if you're an iTunian, goodness, go to that. What was the website again? DPC
Frontier.
Frontiers.com. That's D as in doctor, P as in Paul, C as in Charlie, frontiers.com.
Is it plural?
I think it's just frontier.com.
Frontier.
Yeah.
Oh. All right, Frontier. Just Google it, all right? And y'all will find it. But it pulls up a map with an incredible amount of these offices. And I can see how. I have no intention of getting rid of my high deductible HSA plan. But I do struggle over the first $6,000 is out of my pocket. And if being in a program like yours can help me control that $6,000 and understand that I'm in the driver's seat here and I can pick the best offerings, it's very, very appealing. And then you have another offering, we'll call it offering B, so to speak, that includes an insurance-like, it's not quite insurance, an insurance-like option that is accepted under Obamacare.
It's ACA compliant.
It's ACA compliant. And I don't want to get into that too much, but for those of you who don't have any insurance, this DPC model has an option that could work. But for those of you even with insurance, I think it's a really interesting model, especially for those of you like me who have a very high deductible. We have to pay that deductible. And here is a doctor's office and a whole movement, so to speak, of doctors nationwide who are really trying to find top quality care that they have to send outside of their offices, all the services and all the clinics and whatever you call it, wherever you send blood and cells to.
Labs.
Labs. Thank you. I knew I was just testing you. Very good.
Thank you.
And you're going to find the best prices possible. So if I go in and you say, Jim, we got to get you an MRI, you're going to find a nice place or a good place that I can get that at the lowest cost. Yeah. So I think it's a wonderful model on that. But let's lead into those.
And I think, before you move on, I think one of the biggest deficiencies of these ever more popular high deductible health plans is that in the phase where you're covering the costs within this high deductible, it's almost like someone's handed you the keys to the car, but you have no idea what it costs to fill it up or how much it costs to turn left versus right. You're driving blind.
So I don't even know where the car is.
Right. What good was it for you to be handed the keys when you don't have the information to make all the decisions properly? So this is a way, I guess, help to pull back the curtain, the Wizard of Oz curtain, to reveal what the information you need to know to make the right decisions to kind of control.
Right, because
yourself.
With a high deductible policy, folks, I'm all for them. Health insurance shouldn't be treated like auto insurance, which unfortunately it is. If you have a car, you have car insurance. It's not going to pay when your alternator breaks or your tire goes flat. That's not what auto insurance does. But it's going to help you if your car is in a more significant issue. It's totaled or it needs repairs, major repairs. That's where auto insurance kicks in. So I have no problem having a high deductible plan. What ticks me off is I now have a $6,000 deductible as well as a near $600 a month premium. So I'm already out of pocket every year if I needed the full service, almost $13,000 a year. Every year I got to come up with that, the deductible and the insurance premiums. They don't go away if I need it. However, if I got a serious disease, and God forbid I don't want it, but if I had a serious disease that's going to start running me $50,000, $100,000, $200,000, I don't care how quick I reach that $6,000 deductible. I've got the big issue now, and that's what you buy insurance for, the catastrophe. But if I have five stitches that are in my hand, I'm not going to walk willy-nilly around and say, ah, screw it, I got to get to a $6,000 deductible anyways. No, because I just need five stitches. Other than that, I'm perfectly healthy. So I, as a consumer, don't want to just willy-nilly pay my $6,000 deductible just to reach it really fast. I'm going to want to find the best place to go. And last two Novembers ago, I didn't find the best place to go. I'm also the idiot who forgot I was in an MDVIP program and totally forgot to call my doctor, which didn't win
was
me.
Was that
any.
The same day you forgot to drain your...
Yes, it was.
Your,
the same day
swamp
I forgot,
cooler I forgot, before it froze?
I forgot to winterize my swamp cooler that day as well.
I see.
And then that froze and caused a whole host of... Mm-hmm. That was $20,000. Those stitches cost me a hell of a lot of money.
Well, you know, we consider it, and most DPC docs would agree, we consider it our mission to keep people from hitting their deductible. So, you know, we have failed you if you end up... hitting that no,
it depends 6, on the severity of the condition, though.
Of course.
Absolutely.
But there are so many of these nickeling and diming kinds of situations that add up to a lot of nickels and a lot of dimes that we can take care of and we can manage. So that's sort of the first point is, yes, we want to be guides for this crazy frontier of healthcare bills and rip the screen down and be transparent and all that. But much more so, we really want to be partners in your health. And so a lot of times when people ask me what I really do, I tell them I'm actually a surgeon. I perform barriorectomies between doctors and patients. You know, the current model, the current conventional healthcare system does so much to put barriers of crap between the physician and the patient. There's co-pays. There's all kinds of claims and bills and you know, if you're, we're going to talk about PPOs and HMOs. If you're in network or not in network, you can go here. You can't go there. We're all about removing those barriers.
But that's how current insurance is. It's not like auto insurance. They want it to be more like auto insurance rather, and it shouldn't be. You shouldn't expect just because you're in insurance.
It is like auto insurance.
Right, but it shouldn't be that way. It should be just for catastrophes. And
auto insurance isn't for catastrophes, so it should be like it. You're saying it backwards.
Well, know what I mean.
I know, but I'm just clarifying for the listening audience.
For those who don't
your
know
your auto insurance doesn't pay for oil changes and new tires and that sort of thing. We shouldn't expect health insurance to do that.
But people do.
Right.
People expect, oh, I have health insurance. I got a sniffle. It should be all taken
but
care of.
But that creates this lack of transparency for these things because everything is hidden behind the insurance curtain.
But not only that, it creates a disincentive in the sense, if it's only $20 to go see the doctor on a copay, I'm going to go for any stupid reason.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a sniffle. Oh, look, this hangnail. It just doesn't look right. And they go in because it's only, quote unquote, costing $20. What they don't see is it's actually costing $300 behind the scene.
Look, if you need a liver transplant, I think it's appropriate to have all kinds of layers and levels of bureaucracy to figure out how to pay everybody involved in that liver transplant. If you need those five stitches put in, to put those 27 layers, and yes, somebody actually did the math, it's 27 independent steps from processing that fee at the time of your visit for the stitches to when the doctor actually receives the payment. And usually that's several weeks. So we have this massive, overburdened, bloated system of, you know, essentially moving $50 from point A to point B. And that ends up creating so much waste and complexity that's absolutely unnecessary. So keep insurance for the liver transplants. I'm all for it. I'm a fan of insurance for those types of flood, fire, and tornado catastrophes. But get it out of primary care. It should have never been there. We've never. The most expensive thing you can get in my office if you pay cash is a couple of $100. So why, you know, you go to the grocery store and you spend a couple of $100 on groceries and no one asks for your insurance. And certainly you go to the grease monkey place for your oil change. Nobody asks for your insurance
card. Right. They don't say, can I see your insurance card and write all this? Okay. No. Well, there's a $10 copay with your insurance for the oil change.
It would collapse the system. They'd
exactly,
go bankrupt.
Exactly.
Which is what's happening to us as physicians in this country.
But do you worry when concierge services first came out, and yours isn't concierge. It's not the what uber wealthy. And I don't know why they call MDVIP, the program I'm in, concierge. I don't think it's concierge prices. I know there's some very wealthy people who pay $10,000-$20,000 a year to have their doctor personally, like, right there. That's concierge. But do you worry, because when true concierge first came out, Ted Kennedy, hate him. God bless his soul, Ted Kennedy from Massachusetts, where I'm from. But he said, that's unfair. This from a guy who probably has his own personal doctor, by the way, felt it was unfair because not everyone could afford to pay to be in a program to have access to their doctor. He said that's not right, and the Democrats really hated concierge prepaid type medical services. Do you worry that a movement may come up? Because we may say it's $100 a month, but let's be honest, there are a lot of people in this nation that couldn't afford that, Doc, and they wouldn't be able to. Now, you might be able to argue if they didn't have to pay as much on insurance, yada, 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 but there's some people who just don't make enough, and I worry the politicians are going to get involved, especially because I personally believe, and you and I spoke off mic before, you also agree the ACA, Obamacare, was intended to collapse the system. It is slowly collapsing the system, so we will be left with a single-payer system. We already have a movement in Colorado. They're trying to get a ballot initiative passed this year to, they call it Colorado Cares for All or something similar to that. They want a single-payer, the state of Colorado, to pay for every Coloradoan's health care. And there is a huge movement for that. But I worry these movements will then turn around and say, your business model isn't allowed. It is not fair that some people can pay to get you and others can't. And they're going to outlaw it.
Well, it's first of all, a misrepresentation in understanding of what we're trying to do. We're actually the only innovation that I'm aware of that's saving money. That's bending the cost curve.
But that doesn't matter when it comes to fairness. When a politician, I'm asking you to look at this through the eyes of a politician. Well, that's the bad part.
Fortunately, we do have bipartisan support. So there's a, you know, we have something called the Direct Primary Care Coalition. So I myself have flown out, talked to many, many senators and congressmen, was actually invited to the White House, spoke to Obama's staffers about this. They said, wow, what are all these people in Colorado and other states doing to actually demonstrate that it's possible to decrease overall healthcare systemic costs? So it's not a matter of who pays for it. You know, I don't have any intellectual or sociological problem with subsidizing DPC. If you can't afford $99 a month or $49 a month, which is what it is for children, it's perfectly fine for the government to step in or for other groups to step in and say, you know what, instead of putting you on Medicaid, we're going to subsidize this DPC membership for this doctor who's going to be available for you 24/7. He's going to keep your butt out of the ER for nonsensical things, which 80% of the things you go to the ER for are nonsensical.
Well, my only caution will be when you get the government involved with paying for something, then bureaucrats get involved, then the paperwork gets deeper, and you have to sign. And before you know it, you're complaining about the same thing.
Look, philosophically, I think we're coming from the same place. I think there is a very, very important role for government. I'm absolutely not an anarchist, and God bless the policemen and women who keep us safe, and many of the other wonderful things that government provides for us in terms of infrastructure and a whole bunch of other stuff. But there is a point where government gets too big, And I think we're flirting, and we've been flirting for a long time, with government being too big in places where it's no longer making the right decisions. It's taking away freedoms. It's actually decreasing quality of the product and the service that we provide to our patients. And, you know, particularly in the primary care movement that I described, you know, the more bureaucracy and the more red tape and the more coding and nonsense, it's just harder to give that time, to allocate that time to taking care of the people that we want to actually be healthy. And so it is an uphill battle. We're not naive to the fact that there are forces out there that are trying to swing everything into, you know, essentially an authoritarian model of single payer, both on a federal as well as on currently here in Colorado. We're the only state that I'm aware of in the nation that's trying to do this single payer model that sort of failed.
Vermont
in Massachusetts.
Vermont tried it, and it failed two years later. And, you know, Bernie Sanders' home state had to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And even the Denver Post, I don't know if you've been following it, came out with an editorial. It was either an editorial or an article, I forget, ripping this, that the quote-unquote cost that the proponents claim is not real, and it's going to be billions higher than what they're saying. So, I mean, I don't want to turn this into a Colorado discussion, but I'm hoping that doesn't pass because I don't think it's going to work in this state. I don't think you can insure everyone at the cost of what they're saying, provide everything.
Not only that, but single payer has been tried and it's failed everywhere. There's no such thing, actually, because everywhere that they do have a single payer, for example, abroad, there's always a private alternative.
And you and I talked about that when we were talking in Boulder. Absolutely. There's always a private alternative for those who can afford it.
Which goes back to the Ted Kennedy thing. You haven't actually helped anyone.
I know.
You've just created more of a
focus. But it's more government control. And there's some people who like that. And we have to recognize that as we talk openly about this, that some people believe government can run things better than non-government.
Yep. Well, the music means we're at the end of our third segment. We'll be back with our final segment here in a moment. When we come back, we're going to hear the number one song from 35 years ago in 1981. It is a new song, but hope you like it because it lasts 9 weeks at the number one spot. So this week's song is often considered the greatest song duet of all time.
Now, is this song, that's going to be
we
long.
We don't have time for questions, Jim.
Well, do you like it? Because you didn't like
I like it more than Betty Davis Eyes,
right,
but not a whole lot more.
Okay.
So we'll check this out right after the short break.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. And click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security.
My There's only you in my life, the only thing that's right.
My first love.
Well, welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That was the number one song this week, 35 years ago.
I don't even remember this song, and it's been number one for 9 weeks.
It will be. This is the first of nine, so you're going to get to learn to love this
Doc,
song.
Doc, have you heard this before?
I have heard the song.
Of course.
This is a good song.
This is, who is
Lionel
it?
Richie and Diana Ross. The greatest song duet of all time is what?
What is it?
Endless Love.
That's the name of the song?
Yeah.
Where the hell was I during that 9 week period?
I don't know. maybe at the movies, watching Brooke Shields in the movie of the same name.
No, the only Brooke Shields show that wasn't Brooke Shields. Who is the girl there with those dreadlock beads that was really hot?
That was Bo Derek.
Bo Derek, yeah.
What movie
was
Bo Derek and Brooke Shields, very different. Yeah. She was in 10.
10, that's the I was probably busy watching that show.
For 9 weeks.
Okay. Oh, yeah. When you're a teenager in the 70s? Yes.
Okay. So, actually, this was being the greatest song duet of all time, supposedly. This was Lionel Richie's first attempt at writing a duet. Film did mildly well, but the song, obviously, was a huge hit for 9 weeks. So I think what we're going to do,
all kinds of couples have remade this song. So we're not going to listen to the same one over and over. Well, maybe we'll listen to all the people that came after this that re-recorded Endless Love as a duet. Like Kenny Rogers did one. Who else did one? Well, Tom Jones did it.
Or we could do what
Dionne Warwick.
What we can do, Tina suggested. We already did the number one. Mm-hmm. Then she'll do the next song in the...
Yeah. I like her little note. Listen to... Hope Chris likes this song better than Betty Davis Eyes. It will last 9 weeks. To keep everyone from getting bored, we will toss in a few other hits from the top 10 list during this time.
Yes. So what she's going to do is toss in other hits that don't make it to number one.
But we're close, but people like.
So it might be leading in, we're going to come with the top three song in America 40 years ago this week because we've already heard the number one and two. Just to kind of, because now I'm going to end up complaining about that song like you did about Betty Davis Eyes.
9 weeks.
Do you like Betty Davis Eyes? Remember that song by Kim Carnes?
Kim Carnes,
sure.
Do you like that?
You know, I don't know if I'd want to listen to it for 9 weeks.
Oh, see, exactly. He hated it. Oh, it just grated on his nerves.
Well, I just wanted to clear her throat or something. I just don't.
You threw poor Betty Davis, not Betty Davis, Kim Carnes under the bus.
Well, Betty
so
Davis
many times.
Has an interesting voice too, but she's fine because she doesn't really sing. But, yeah, Kim Carnes, I can do without. Anyway, so that brings us to our update on what's new with helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa.
So this week on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, our blog, I talk about the fact that now, since the end of July, a cell phone is required to access your Social Security information online.
Your cell phone is?
Your cell phone. Not only that, your cell phone must be able to receive text messages. If you do not have that capability, you can no longer, as we speak, because this started July 30th, no grace period. No longer can you access your Social Security account online unless you have a cell phone that can receive text messages.
Is this for account authorization?
Every time you log in.
What do they do, send you a text?
They send you a text, which is good for 10 minutes. You use it in addition to your normal username and password. That will grant you access. If you cannot receive that text message, you have to go back to the old-fashioned way. Call them. Write to them or visit a local office in order to find out about your Social Security information.
Interesting.
So that's new. It's essentially a step, obviously, to increase security, which I point out is a good thing because most governmental systems are lacking tremendously. I'm actually surprised we haven't heard about more hacking issues. But, of course, the IRS was hacked. Some 720,000 people's tax return information was leaked out about a year ago. About 2 years ago, the Office of Personnel Management found a way to share 21.5 million people's records with fine teenagers in Russia and China or wherever this happens. But this is a way to help protect from some of that kind of stuff. But they did it in a very small manner, a very focused way. This is the one and only validation or authentication tool that they've got right now. So make sure you've got your cell phone. I tested it. It does work. When I logged on yesterday or the couple days ago to try it, I hadn't logged on to my account for a while. I had an existing account at Social Security. SSA.gov is the website you go to, and there's a My Account link there that you can go to look at your information. So I had been on there before, so I had a valid username and password, but when I logged in, they said, oh, you haven't yet added, and you must add now a cell phone number, and we will send you a text message to that number, and you'll need to use that from here on out. And
interesting.
So I go through kind of what it does, what it doesn't do, some of the alternatives to using that, but it was more of a public service announcement just to let people know that that's there so they're not shocked when they go to try to get their Social Security information.
Okay.
What's new, pussycat?
All right. See, this is a very musical show, if you haven't noticed.
I really like that.
We got music for
everything. We've got all kinds of things. We haven't gotten to... Have we got a... need to see if you can create a big butt moment.
Oh.
I like big butts and I can't...
Because I've got all kinds of things here.
All right.
See, we call on the show, if especially if we get into a lot of the rules with retirement accounts, and you can do this, but you can't do that. If there's a really big butt one, I'll just say to Chris, this is definitely, Chris, going to be a Sir Mix-a-Lot moment.
Got it.
And then he'll play.
Yeah, we've got that. We haven't used Dragnet for a while. Yeah, we've got that. We've got... See, we never get to use these. I feel compelled to to turn them all loose here just so I can play them.
I know nothing.
It's been months since we've used any of these.
Well, we'll find different times. Most of those, like the I know nothing, is when we have Justin in here.
I love it when he's not here.
We're not throwing him under the bus.
Whatever.
We did the Gomer Pyle one. He had no clue who Gomer
Pyle
was.
He didn't know
who
Gomer Pyle was, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Well, we'll have to tee up a big butt moment for this.
We might find
episode.
A big butt moment, okay, so we good. Can handle that. And excellent. He was again. He loves playing that now, but I wanted the Sir Mix-a-Lot Big Butt song, and he was
It doesn't really fit our demographic. It's pushing the envelope a little bit with.
It's a big butt.
With, yes, but retirees.
Don't
aren't,
have big
aren't
butts.
Really Sir Mix-a-Lot folks.
You know, they might enjoy the version that my daughter played for me recently, which was a Shakespearean version of that.
Oh, now you've
I
intrigued
need to download
him.
That.
Now you've intrigued Chris.
Very nice.
Shakespeare does Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Exactly. I'm fond of large gluteus maximuses, and I cannot deny something like that.
Very nice.
Very nice.
I'll have to look that one up. Yeah. That, yeah.
It's not going to be the same.
It'll be a little different.
Know. Be a little different.
All right,
get change.
Shakespeare does
okay.
Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, maybe I'll do that while you guys are talking.
No, you don't have to do it right away.
No, I'm excited now.
Now he's going to go find it. Right. See, he created.
Look what I did.
Listeners, you will hear Shakespeare do a rap version of Sir Mix-a-Lot. Okay, off mic during the last commercial break, Doc, you and I were talking and it was some really...
Do you mind him referring to you as Doc? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, Dr.
Whatever you prefer.
Dave.
I'm just curious because it kind of evolved. You know, it was Dr. Tusek and then Doctor, and then here recently it's just
I call
doc.
My doc, Doc. Yeah, okay. I went to the eye
I'm
doctor
just making
yesterday.
Sure.
I say, hey, Doc.
I'm just making sure it's okay.
How is the correct way to address, because I have deep respect for doctors. Do you prefer Doctor? Do you prefer David? Do you prefer Doc? Do you prefer Mr. Tusek?
You know, once we start spinning tracks like this, I think... Doc is probably the most appropriate.
Ha!
So
anything else you want to make fun of me on that?
No.
Okay.
I'm good. I'm not sure I should play this without listening to it before it's live on the show.
Oh, so you found it?
I did.
Welcome to As Written by Shakespeare.
Is this it?
Tonight's episode.
I think it might
Baby
be.
Baby Got Back by Sir Mix-a-Lot. Opening monologue. Enjoy. Zounds, m'lady Rebecca, turn thee and gaze upon yonder saucy wench's backside. Tis
okay,
a great...
maybe we should okay. be playing this.
I don't know if that was the one that she played
no,
for me, but
okay.
You get the
it's
idea.
On the same,
just get to
the
refrain
okay.
where he says, I like big butts and I can't
okay.
deny.
Why don't we move on?
Okay.
I'll research this a little more and get the right clip.
Gotcha. Okay, what we wanted to chat about is a couple of things, and I know we kept saying we were going to get into some of the definitions, and we didn't. We may have to do that on another show, because I wanted to carry on a few of the things that you were sharing with me that a lot of people are doubtful on. As they hear about your business model and how you're trying to lower the cost of healthcare, I really like it. And again, is this perfect for everyone? Probably not. But is it perfect for a lot of people? Definitely. Because the way I look at it is I have a high deductible plan married to an HSA account. I told you in Boulder when we first met, my idea of having the HSA is to fund as much as I can in there, but to continue to cover my medical expenses outside of the HSA, especially because HSAs are incredibly flexible. Did you know you can take money out of an HSA years later for expenses, years before 100% tax-free? It doesn't have to be in the year of the expense. I was doubtful on that. It is true.
I heard a rumor of that, but I'd never looked into it to
yes.
confirm it. You've confirmed that.
Yes. And you can save the receipts and take them out later, years later, to compensate yourself for medical. It's just, it's phenomenal, these HSA accounts.
Why don't you share just, if you can, in a small snippet.
Me?
Yeah. Why you said, because people are thinking, well, why is he putting money in his HSA if he's going to just pay for it out of pocket?
An HSA is the trifecta of taxes, people.
Of avoiding taxes.
Absolutely. Not avoiding. You can go to jail for that. Just politely not paying.
Okay.
Everybody knows Chris and I love Roth IRAs, but Roth IRAs are not a trifecta. They're a bifecta. Whereas your IRA is a nofecta. You get a little bit of a deduction today, but you're going to be nailed in taxes in retirement when you can least afford it, because you're going to have to be forced to take money out because of required minimum distributions. You're going to have to pay income taxes on that. That distribution is probably going to raise your what they call MAGIE, modified adjusted gross income, for Social Security taxation to levels high enough where your Social Security is going to start being taxed. And for a lot of people, especially those in their 40s and 50s, more likely than not, your R&Ds are going to subject your Medicare Part B premiums to surcharges. All of this is going to be caused. You know how Doc, you would, see, now you don't know.
Go ahead, he said Doc's fine.
All right. Mm-hmm. You know, Doc, how you were saying, now I just lost my train of thought. It was brilliant, though.
It's a trifecta.
It was. It was going somewhere with this. Oh, the cost. You don't know how all this is going to cost. And it was so hard for you to help that woman who incurred a $9,000 charge years ago. We try to get our clients to understand that's the issue with IRAs. I don't know what the tax issues are going to be. I just know they're going to be there. So the government came out with Roth IRAs in 1998 that gave you a bifecta, not a trifecta, but a bifecta. They said, look, you can put money into these accounts, but you cannot deduct it on your taxes today. However, all the growth will be 100% tax-free, and distributions from your Roth IRA will not be subject to required minimum distribution rules. You can keep this account around for as long as you want. Distributions will also not subject your Social Security to taxes like a distribution from a regular IRA will. And distributions from Roth IRAs will not cause you to pay higher Medicare premiums later in life like distributions from a regular IRA will.
Right. So there's the bifecta.
There's the bifecta. Mm-hmm. But it's not a trifecta until they came out with HSAs. HSAs, here's what's beautiful, people. If you have a high deductible medical plan that qualifies as an HSA, not all do. If you have a high deductible medical plan, they allow you to put, they being the government, allows you to put money into a HSA account. There's certain contribution limits that you're tied to. Depends if you're how your age and if you have a family plan or not. I don't want to get into all that. But right now, I can put about $3,500 a year in. When I do, folks, I can deduct that $3,500 on this year's taxes. You heard that right. I can deduct it. And the money grows 100% tax-free inside the HSA. And if I take it out to pay qualified medical expenses, it is 100% tax-free. So I have the trifecta. I can deduct the contributions this year. It grows tax-free. And I can take it out tax-free for qualified medical expenses, which is pretty wide expenses that I can take, very wide expenses I can take it out.
The list of approved expenses.
Approved. Mm-hmm. Now, if I take money out prior to age 65, not 59 and a half, 65, and not use it for medical expenses, I have to pay a 20% penalty.
Yep.
But that 20% penalty goes away at age 65. There is no more a 20% penalty for non-medical expenses. You do not get to take them out tax-free. You will have to pay income taxes, but not a penalty. However, if you save all your receipts, you actually could take the money out after the age of 65 to reimburse yourself for expenses you incurred prior in life. I didn't believe it. And I even had to question the Ed Slot group on it.
This sounds like one of those rules that as it becomes utilized,
it's going to go
away. It's going to get squashed. But that is
but
the rule
right now. That's the rule.
Yep.
You do not have to reimburse yourself for medical expenses incurred in that year. You can save the receipts. But even if they squash that, as Chris alluded to, when you turn 65, you can use the money in your HSA plan to pay for your Medicare premiums 100% tax-free. You heard that right, folks. You can pay for your Medicare premiums. You can pay for your co-pays and deductibles, all with HSA money. And the money goes in, you deduct it. it grows tax-free and it comes out tax-free. Whereas a Roth IRA, the money goes in and you cannot deduct it. It's after-tax money. This is the trifecta. That's why I like it. Okay, so back to where you can help me. I have this HSA, Doc, and I fund it. I actually fund the HSA over my Roth IRA. I did not fully fund my Roth last year, Chris. Now, you're going to say, oh, my God, Jim, you're a financial advisor. What? You didn't. Yeah, what? I didn't because I was in a bind in the sense I wanted to fully fund my HSA, and I always fund my Roth in a lump sum, and I quite frankly didn't have $15,000 lying around in January. I did have it, but I decided to invest it in the business instead. And, you know, we've hired some other staff. And I had to make a tough decision. I had to say, do I want to fully fund all this or do I want to keep some money in the business? And I decided to keep some money in the business. But I fully funded my HSA first because of the trifecta of it. Because in the Roth, I would not be able to deduct that contribution. But in my HSA, I could. So it was much better for me to say, okay, I'm going to fully fund the HSA, partially fund my Roth, rather than fully fund the Roth and put nothing in the HSA. So what I'm getting at, people, is these accounts are really, really unique, but it forces me to manage my deductible, Doc. And I have to look at that. I'm not anxious to reach a $6,000 deductible every year.
So that his insurance kicks in.
So my insurance kicks in. Unless I have something major where $6,000 is nothing because this whole thing is going to cost $600,000. Then I'm like, all right, well, let's just get to the $6,000 because I need this care. But that's where your program comes in. You can help me because I don't know if we said it on or off mic. You said your job is to keep people out of the hospital and never reach their deductible.
Yeah, that's really our mission. We feel that, within reason, we failed you if you end up having that deductible hit. Now, granted, tragedies happen in medicine, and there's only so much you can do. But with the amount of totally avoidable and preventable very, very high charges that we can either reduce very, very significantly, typically 10x, so a tenfold decrease in the charges for different services, or we provide them at no cost at all, can really help people keep away from keep more money in their HSA.
Well, again, your program may not appeal to someone who has a very good, maybe employer-provided plan with very low deductible, very low co-pays, and they're not caring about their out-of-pocket expenses, which is the whole problem with healthcare today. Nobody truly sees what this is actually costing. Right. But I would be amazed, and as a business owner, do you work with businesses and allow their employees to all come in? Because this is a wonderful model that could even lower their expenses.
Yeah. I mean, it's been very successful for us. With my former company, we worked with lots of different employers, of all different sizes. The sweet spot really is for the ones that there's two. If you're looking at bolting on direct primary care to an existing insurance contract in the conventional sense, then the self-funded plans, I mean, they definitely take the cake. So we can walk into a company of 500 or more employees, and they essentially use a third-party administrator, a TPA, to manage all of these funds. The company then allocates a certain amount of money into this fund that hopefully grows over time, but when anyone gets sick, they reach into it and use that money to pay for it. And direct primary care programs can come and work alongside with the HR team at that company, identify the types of risk factors that are specific to that corporation. For instance, people who maybe have a high smoking rate or they have a high obesity rate at a given company, and we can develop wellness programs to address those types of things preventatively, preemptively. And then if anyone does get sick, whether it's on the job or off, because we don't really make that distinction, it's all included. So we help them with keeping their work comp rates very low. We help them with keeping their patients, productive and out of the hospital. And we're there to essentially answer any health-related questions and be advocates for them as individuals as well as company-wide. So we've done that with various ergonomic programs where we've come in, explained people how to prevent neck pain and back pain and things like that. These are all things that add up for a business, you know, and end up decreasing productivity and costing the company more. For the small and medium sized, you know, typically kind of below that 100 mark and particularly below 50 employees, that's where the health share plan really shines. And combining direct primary care with an insurance alternative can just drop those rates significantly, maintain the ACA compliance so that they don't have the penalties, and still give them just a great product.
Well, Chris held up his two fingers. It's better than his one finger salute. and that means we have 2 minutes left. So before we run out of time and peanut starts, I admit, listeners, get into all the definitions and everything I wanted to get into. Maybe we'll bring the doctor on again to expand upon some of this. And I'm sure, I think our listeners will have found a lot of benefit out of this, Chris, because I know I did. So I find it a very great model. And I'm going to encourage any listener who has a high deductible policy, or if you're looking to control your deductible costs or get into the access. That's what's amazing, the access. Because most people in traditional medical are dealing with a doctor with thousands of patients. You're not getting his or her cell phone. You're not getting their email address. You're not going to get the ability to come in on a Sunday afternoon and get stitches fixed. So if you're interested in those, again, go to DPCFrontier.com or contact us on our website and we'll get you some info. But if you're in Colorado and you're in the Boulder and Longmont area and you're interested in meeting Dr. Tusick, Doc, how can people reach out to you if they're interested in your program?
Yeah, so our website is www.cloudmedical.io. It's not .com, .io. And you can call our clinic. We have three locations, two in Boulder and one in Longmont. And our number is 303-848-3800.
And repeat that again.
303-848-3800.
And that's cloudmedical.io. Cloudmedical.io.
Or if you don't have a pencil, listeners, you can always contact us and ask for that information. We'll get that right to you. Going to our normal website, jimhelps.com. So that brings us to the end of this show. We'll be back with you next week with another episode of the Retirement and IRA Show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Like what you just heard? Missed some of today's show? Listen again on iTunes or the Retirement and IRA Show.com.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
The benefit.